Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. New York Times bestselling author Bob Sullivan also is a blogger for MSNBC.com. His Red Tape Chronicles cover everything from credit cards to student loan debt, from the value of the complainer to the best deals on cell phones and more. His books include Gotcha Capitalism and Stop Getting Ripped Off. Clarion calls both, Bob. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you bet. Thanks a lot for having me on.
The idea that Americans are easy targets for corporate scams is a common theme in a lot of what you write about. What is it about Americans that makes us so gullible?
Gullibility is really an interesting subject, and I set out to try to figure that out when I wrote this last book. And I boiled it down to seven different reasons, which would take a lot to go through them all. But chief among them is this concept of innumeracy, which has actually been around, although not very well known, for about 15 years or so. And innumeracy is very simply numerical illiteracy. And I believe, along with a group of math researchers, a small but growing group, that there is a hidden epidemic in America of people who not only didn't do very well in high school algebra or calculus classes, but who really are incapable of some basic arithmetic, at least on the spot. And so when folks, and usually just for evidence of this, I tell people to conjure up an image of the last time they had lunch with four or five friends, and the bill comes, and nobody knows what to do, how to split it up, and people pull out gadgets, people pay for the iPhone tipulator app so they can figure out what 20% is, and in the end, everyone throws out a $20 bill and lets the waitress figure it out. So if people can't split bills, imagine what happens when they're sitting at a car dealership where they're sitting with a mortgage broker and all the numbers start flying. They just don't stand a chance. I think that's a really big problem with American consumers.
Well, I think we've all been standing at a cash register with a teenager who's trying to figure out what kind of change to give us. If it's not typed, you know, printed out there in digital numerals in front of them, they don't know. Doesn't it kind of start with that? Because back in the olden days when I started working on a cash register, it actually came flying out at you, sucked you in, you know, socked you in the gut, and you had to figure out the change on your own.
That's right. You know, and I was overwhelmed with emails from people complaining about exactly that, about over and over again, a cashier stumped. And, of course, not just teenagers, everybody.
Yeah.
Stumped with trying to
They're growing up.
yeah, sure. And you know, I actually am not as harsh as some critics. I do think, because I've had this experience, if you sit down with people in a non-pressure environment, they can figure out what 20% of a number is. But when faced with a critical situation, and when money's on the line, everything's more intense. Most people, a majority of Americans, give up. And what that means is that they surrender to whatever it's told them. And over again, you'll hear from people, they get crazy answers from someone selling them a car or from someone selling them a house. And rather than trust their own gut about the fact that number sounds wrong, they just go with what they're told because they're experiencing what some psychologists call flooding. And their mental capacities just disappear. And I really do believe that this is not the only problem. There are several other issues, obviously, mm-hmm. that led to the subprime crisis. But the fact that American consumers have almost no faith in their own math skills really makes them set up to be lambs to the slaughter.
You've written about that how people spend more time picking out a house than they do a mortgage, which on its face seems like the obvious thing to do. A house seems much more complex than crunching numbers on a mortgage.
Yeah, but in the end, the loan is more important than the home. And the way I explain that is, you know, if you have a home that you don't like for some reason, you're sick of the kitchen or you don't like the location anymore, in general, it's easier to get rid of a bad home than it is a bad mortgage. And so the commitment is much more serious to the money than it is to the structure, and people just don't look at it that way. People who easily spend 4, 5, 6 months trying to pick out, you know, every little last detail of the home they want spend almost no time, 10, 15, 20 minutes, picking out their mortgage company. You know, I don't expect people to spend 6 months picking out a mortgage company, but those things sure are out of balance.
If you're just joining us, my guest is New York Times bestselling author Bob Sullivan. He's also a blogger for MSNBC.com. He writes the Red Tape Chronicles on everything from credit card to student loan debt and much, much more. He will be a keynote speaker at the first Ohio Consumer Protection Summit tomorrow in Columbus. It's sponsored by the Office of the Ohio Attorney General, Richard Cordray. What is the red tape pledge that you write about?
Well, I've been doing this now for several years, and one of the things I've seen over and over again is I'm not really I'm not breaking news here by telling people that their cable company or their cell phone company might be stealing money from them or might be confusing them into paying more than they should. Everybody has a sense of that. In my books, I do my best to lay out really specific recipes for how to fight back against those things. And some people, I try to fill in the gaps for people. And to some people, there is a surprise. There are agencies you can go to and ways to file complaints that actually do get results. But what I have found is a lot of people do know this, or at least have some common sense about it. But everybody's so darn busy. I mean, people are just busy raising kids and trying to keep their jobs right now. And they don't want to focus on this stuff. But I have calculators in the book and on my website that show how much money this really adds up over the course of time. So in order to help people focus and to take advantage of what's going on in social media right now, I started a new Facebook group called the Red Tape Fight Pledge. I write the Red Tape Chronicles, so these are my readers. Mm-hmm. And we're pledging to each other to spend 1 hour in the next 30 days to pick off just one of these things that's really bugging you. Everybody I know has something nagging at them, some fight they've been putting off with a credit card company or with a cable company or with a retail store that they're frustrated with. And I want people to just promise publicly to focus 1 hour on one of these things and tell us what they are, and then come back in a month and tell us how they did. And I'm jumping in often and offering help. But one really powerful thing that's happening on this group, which has really caught on in the last couple of days, it's only a week old, people are helping each other, which is what I was hoping would happen. Somebody will say, I'm really angry at this credit card company. I don't know what to do. And 8 or 9 people will jump in and say, oh, here's what I did, and it really worked for me. So trying to really harness the power of public commitment. Here's what I'm going to do, just like people do with diets or getting a new job, and also harness the collective intelligence of people who really care about this stuff.
You know, one of the ideas or one of the things you suggest people think about is the next time you're ticked off at your bank, do something about it. And I think it's probably once or twice a year my spouse and I say, that's it, we're switching banks. But we never do. Right. There's this sort of inertia.
That's what a lot of companies count on, and that is the spirit that I'm trying to take it to the next level. You know, the world is full of people who give out advice, but all the advice isn't worth anything unless people take steps themselves. And so I'm trying to enable that. You probably are familiar if you are like so many other Americans who have thought to themselves, "That's it, one more overdraft fee, I'm out of here, I'm switching banks." There is a movement started by the Huffington Post, Arianna Huffington, and one of her columnists. To help people move money from their large bank to either a small community bank or a credit union. It's called moveyourmoney.info, I-N-F-O, and they make it easy there. And there's other places online that help with this, too. Most folks just think it's going to be a huge hassle and don't know where to go. And honestly, it is a bit of a struggle. It will take some time to move your money from whatever bank you have, that's part of their strategy, to a new bank. But it's not as hard as you might think. There are options. And with the moveyourmoney.info, you can type in your zip code and get some suggestions of smaller banks near you. And, you know, the size of the bank isn't necessarily all that important, but I think this is true not just with banks, but with almost every retailer you have. The big problem is almost all of our interactions now are with huge, faceless, multinational corporations. So when there's a problem, when a product has a defect, or when there's an overdraft fee and there's extenuating circumstances, there's no one to talk to, and no human has to look you in the eye and say, no, we're still going to keep your money. So anytime you have a chance to have a business relationship with a human being at a smaller company where you might actually know the bank branch manager, for example, I recommend this all the time in my books. Talk to folks when you don't need them. Make some kind of a relationship, some kind of eye contact, so that one time, 6-7 months from now, when you really need to ask for forgiveness for being a couple of days late for a bill or something like that, if you have a chance to have a personal relationship, your odds of getting treated like a person are just a lot better, and that's something we all should strive for.
Yeah, I'm almost embarrassed to bring this up when I do, but I'll never forget the one day I finally looked at my phone bill after several years, and we just got used to it being at a certain rate, but the rate ended, apparently, And it started to go up and up and up gradually. And finally, we looked at it and went, wait a minute, we didn't even make any long-distance phone calls this month, and it's over $100. That sounds stupid, but it snuck up on us. When I talked to the fellow at the phone company, he said, well, you know, you really ought to be checking with your phone company every 6 months and updating your plan.
But who does that?
I was shocked.
Yeah. Well, that's actually the premise of the last book I wrote, Gotcha mm-hmm. Capitalism. Over and over again, cable, satellite TV, cell phones, home phones, all of these products now advertise a teaser price to get you in the door, and then they count on you forgetting. And it happens to virtually everyone, at least for a few months. Your $30 a month cable bill goes to $90 a month overnight, and then it takes you at least a couple of months to call up and do something about it. And it's those months, for some companies, that's the only profit they have, those gotcha months, where you haven't gotten around to dealing with it again because you're busy picking up the kids from school or whatnot. Well, one thing we don't talk nearly enough about, right now all the problems we're discussing involve calling up someone and mm-hmm. probably waiting on hold for 20 minutes. Not all of America is sitting by a phone all day. Plenty of folks are outside working with their hands all day, or teachers who have absolutely no time to get on the phone and wait on hold. And if you can't use a phone, you're really out of luck in dealing with a lot of these headaches. I think it's a terrible business model. I hope that the summit that we're having this week and some of these things are happening around the country, I think we really need to focus on this as a society. When we have entire industries where the only profit they make are these gotcha tactics, well, that's bad business. It's bad actually for both the companies and the consumers, and I'm out to try to stop that.
Yeah, I mean, really all we've been doing is talking about my problems. And so if we multiply that.
I really appreciate that. I mean, you know, it's a little bit of a struggle for me, but I like it. Every time I get on an airplane or train or and describe for a second what I do, I rarely get past the first couple of words because people come at me with, you know what happened to me last week, and I'm so angry about it. So I'm actually mostly, that's great because I know I've touched the nerve. And it keeps me grounded in what the real problems are.
And there's a lot of energy out there to propel you. My guest right now, Bob Sullivan, he's author and journalist. He's written the book, Stop Getting Ripped Off, Why Consumers Get Screwed and How You Can Always Get a Fair Deal. And also, Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. He is a keynote speaker tomorrow at the first Ohio Consumer Protection Summit. It's sponsored by the Office of the Ohio Attorney General. Give us a call, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question or comment for Bob Sullivan, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media and State Auto Insurance present Columbus Neighborhood's Share Your Story Day on Saturday, March 6th from 4 until 6 p.m. at the Sherry Gallery in the Short North. WOSU is collecting your photos and treasured memories of life in Columbus's Short North District for an online community project and TV documentary. Call 614-292-9678 to participate or visit WOSU.org for more information. 28 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. Clouds today and a high of 35 degrees. Clouds tonight and a low of 22 degrees. For Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies, a high right around 33. And looking ahead to Thursday, some sunshine and a high of 36 for Thursday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Bob Sullivan. He's the author and journalist. He wrote Gotcha Capitalism and Stop Getting Ripped Off. Thanks again for joining us on the show today, Bob.
You bet.
Let's talk a little bit about the plans or the proposed Consumer Financial Protection Agency. It's seeming less and less likely that there will be such a thing, despite the debacle of 2008 and 2009.
Well, you know, it's pretty stunning to think that we were led to the very precipice of a global financial collapse and have suffered great consequences, even if we haven't pushed the economy completely off the edge. And yet we sit here today, and there really hasn't been a single significant reform for Wall Street or for consumers that has been passed by Congress and signed into law yet related to the meltdown. The real key reform for consumers that has been proposed is this Consumer Financial Protection Agency. And it is really, it's touch and go right now whether or not it will be passed. It had the full support of President Obama during his campaign and initially after his campaign. It was passed by the House late last year. It's held up in the Senate Banking Committee right now. It's the subject of a lot of horse trading. I've been in communication with several of the Senate offices that are key in involved in the future of this bill. And there are a couple of problems. I think the biggest one of all is that there's so much horse trading going on around the health reform.
Mm-hmm.
That financial reform has taken a bit of a backseat to that. And now this is just my opinion. This isn't based on specific conversations with legislators. But I have to tell you, I think if the health debate does, as we would expect, eventually come to a head, there will be so much political capital spent on that. There will be very, very little left for a fight to the death over financial reform. And so I think what we're going to get is really a deep compromise. Instead of an independent agency that looks over consumer contracts and has the right to stop banks from misbehaving on its own, we're going to get a smaller agency that's part of another financial regulator already that has quite blunted powers. We'll see. I mean, there's still time left on the clock, if you will. But if I were a betting man right now, I would bet against it.
It seems like Congress can only handle one big reform every 3 or 4 years.
I think that's right. And I don't want to prioritize. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not the right person to say we should pick health care over financial reform. I mean, that's a choice I would not want to make. But as a journalist who covers money matters, it is just stunning to me and I think irresponsible that we have not reacted to what happened in 2008 in any kind of constructive way.
614-292-8513. If you would like to speak with author and journalist Bob Sullivan, we have an email right now. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And this one's from Janet. As the lessee of a new Toyota who has been waiting, a letter finally came yesterday to take my car in. Can I have a red tape moment and go in there in person and really get satisfied with putting a big matter aside? It's the electrical system. I know somebody who has the same problem. In fact, I know a few people who have the same problem with their Toyotas. They're waiting for the letter, and then they want to know, well, how much satisfaction can they get?
What a great question. We're still in the middle of the Toyota drama right now, and the question that's on everybody's mind is the mechanical fix that Toyota is currently performing on cars, is that enough? You know, there's a lot of suspicion that the problems run deeper, that it might involve the car's computer or some mm-hmm. other electronic system. We don't have clear answers on that yet. It is going to be very hard to get good answers from the dealers because Toyota itself and federal regulators are still working through what the real problem is.
You just have to kind of wing it then and just go and do your best. There's not a template out there for people.
No, there really isn't. I do think, and we've already seen this, I mean, Toyota is coming forward with discounted financing as a way to try to mm-hmm. to make it right by its consumers. It's too early in this process for me to give people good advice as to what they should do, other than to drive their Toyotas very carefully. I would really strongly recommend to anyone who has one of those cars that, just like you might do when you were learning how to drive in snow, I think you should go to a big empty parking lot someday in the next week or two and practice the routine that you see prescribed for dealing with a stuck accelerator, electronically or otherwise, and how to stop the car properly. But as far as going to the dealership and getting more than the current recall update that Toyota is offering, it's pretty difficult to ask for anything more than that.
You can speak with Bob Sullivan. Give us a call at 614-292-8513. And Robert, you are on the air with Bob Sullivan.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Ann. And I can't wait to read your book, Bob, because I think these things all the time. I think that our business, our some businesses have become so much more powerful than the consumer that it's just created an attitude of futility within our culture. And I'll give you an example. One of my credit card companies had called me, and by the company, I mean they hired some kid to call me. And the first thing out of his mouth is, "We're calling to thank you." And I stopped him right there. I said, "Well, of course you're not calling to thank me." He goes, "Yes, we are." I said, "You know what? The board of directors got together, decided there was a surplus of appreciation, and then devoted this amount of if I was a stockholder in your company, I'd be upset if you're calling people to thank me. That's a waste of money." I said, why don't you sell me something?" And he was positively taken back that I didn't appreciate this, and most people are. When I tell people, "Oh, that's not a big deal," we just expect the people that we're doing business with to lie to us. And yeah. You know, I think when I was a kid, if my dad was doing business with someone and found out that he said something that wasn't genuine, he'd walk away. He said, "I don't want to do business with that person." But I'm in a situation where I wonder if I even have a choice. I can go to this liar or that liar.
Or this insincere person or that insincere person.
That's not that kid's fault. He mm-hmm. was told to say that, but in a way it sort of is, because, you know, honestly, doctors and lawyers have different sets of morals, right? They're required to keep confidentiality of their clients, and so they have a different set of morals than the rest of us. Business people, this is a confusion. Business people do not. Business people have the same set of moral constructs as the rest of us. And if you're lying to make money, you're a liar.
Okay.
Robert, thank you. First of all, I noticed how hard it was for you to even conjure up the word morals there for a while. And we are of like mind. Doctors take what's called a Hippocratic Oath, which begins with, I'm sure you're familiar with, do no harm, and beyond their professional responsibilities, beyond their profit-bound responsibilities to any corporation, they have what used to be called professional responsibilities, which meant doing right by people. In the book, one of the real reasons for the economic collapse, and this gets into the weeds just a little bit, but you probably have heard that there are all these very, very clever folks on Wall Street who came up with all of these new formulas that made it impossible to not make money until they stopped working. They were called quants, and the same group of people who were generated by mathematics schools, graduate degree programs, who used to just go teach math, they ended up going to Wall Street to make billions of dollars inventing these formulas. Well, I have called on them to take what I want to call the Enrico Fermi Oath of doing no harm with math. Just because you happen to be more clever than someone with numbers doesn't make it right for you to steal from them. But yet, all across America, corporate America right now has just lost its moral compass. I think you've hit the nail right on the head. It's terrible that we only have to pick from liars to do business with. I recommend all the time. It really is important for people. I try to insist on liking the person, liking the company that I give my money to, even if I have to pay a little bit more. For example, the top 80% of American credit cards are held with one of four or five U.S. banks. So there really are very few choices in many of these industries. We've allowed these monopolies or duopolies or triopolies to exist. It goes for the bills you pay every month, your cable company, your phone company. How many options do you really have? That's where the regulators have really fallen down. And that's why, while I do firmly believe in putting the blame on consumers for making good choices, there's plenty of blame to go around. And so many of the structures of our industries right now are broken, and that needs to be addressed at a higher level than individual consumers could ever dream of dealing.
Thanks for your call, Robert. We got another call, 614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak to my guest today, Bob Sullivan, he's author and journalist. He's written best-selling Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It, and also Stop Getting Ripped Off, Why Consumers Get Screwed and How You Can Always Get a Fair Deal. Bob is going to be in Ohio tomorrow. He's going to be a keynote at the first Ohio Consumer Protection Summit. It's sponsored by the Office of the Ohio Attorney General. 614-292-8513, and Jan, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want this comes at a good time. The other day I noticed my phone bill was extremely high, my AT&T, and I started looking over the charges. Since last August and before, we had been slammed on three different charges, one at 23 a month, one at 9, one at 8. When my wife called, the women who answered the phone couldn't even tell us what service we were getting slammed for. I'll take your comment off the air.
Okay. Sounds like me. Bob, yeah, well, I swear I didn't pay Jan to call in.
where to begin? He was using a specific technical term, believe it or not, slamming, and cramming is its cousin. These are charges that appear on your home phone bill, and there's a lot of details behind how it can happen, but back when the home phone business was the monopoly, the AT&T monopoly was broken up, you have to allow all sorts of third parties to offer services now if you're a home phone provider. So things like strange voicemail services start showing up or other third-party services. And it's very easy to get these on your home phone bill. I hear all the time from people who say they never authorized anything. Sometimes they'll trick you into signing what looks like a sweepstake entry or something like that. Next thing you know, your long-distance provider has been changed, and there's all sorts of fees. It's very complicated because when you call the phone company up, they will tell you they cannot refund the charges because they didn't charge it in the first place. But if you write to your state regulatory body, they will often give you the refund even if it comes out of their own pocket. Obviously, they're the ones collecting the money, whether they get it or not. You don't deserve it. So call up frequently and complain to your phone company. But if not, you can complain to your state regulator and get that money back if it's your home phone. If it's your cell phone, that's another issue. It's a lot harder to fight with your cell phone because those are only regulated from Washington, D.C. by the FCC, Federal Communications Commission. And I have found complaints sent to the FCC to fall on pretty silent ears.
Yeah, it's a Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, and I one time did threaten to do that, and they said they couldn't connect me as they had promised, and I actually made a threat on a Saturday afternoon, and an hour later I was connected. You know, the phone was turned on, so go figure.
That's a very, very little tips and tricks that consumers really need to know. I don't know every agency in every state, but calling the Ohio Public
Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, PUCO.
Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, yeah, very, very useful trick for dealing with specific problems like your home phone.
Yeah, I wasn't even trying to trick them. I was really angry, and I was going to call. And they actually responded. Let's see, 614-292-8513. And Cynthia, you're on the air. You have another phone company story.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
That last caller reminded me. About 2 months after I had first gotten like a $16 increase in my phone bill, I had time to sit down and look at it, and they were charging me for a voice messaging system that I never ordered. It turned out that they had my daughter's name, who is a minor, and he said, well, she must have ordered it through the Internet. And I said, well, she doesn't even have access to my personal account. So they sent me to a 1-800 number, which was a whole other company. And it took them several months, but eventually they credited one of them and ended up sending me a check for the other amount. But it did take several months of pestering them.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, that's the game because, you know, you're in probably the 30-40 percentile of people who have the stick-to-itiveness to get that money back. And thank you on behalf of all America, and I'm not being facetious, for being that persistent, because it's only, we had more people do what you do, eventually these companies would disappear because they wouldn't be able to make any money. But unfortunately, and for understandable reasons, many people just don't stick to it and give up and pay the money, and that's the only way these companies stay in business.
Right.
Thanks for your call, Cynthia.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bob, there are a lot of Facebook scams going around these days. The suggester invite all of your Facebook friends to participate, or you cannot participate. I've seen them a lot lately. I never do anything like that. I always exit immediately. But what are those all about? Is it really a scam? Or?
Yeah, well, Facebook, first of all, I think it's important to know that Facebook has become so big that for many people, Facebook now is the internet. There are studies showing young people spend more time on Facebook even than they do on email. In fact, I saw a story earlier this week that many companies now, instead of advertising their web address, they're just advertising their Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So it's becoming almost its own separate platform, and it's very, very hard to not participate at all. So assuming, let's put that aside, that you know, for better or worse, and there's plenty of worse, Facebook is just the place where most people are now. And so I can't separate out all of these things, but you have to be very, very careful. There are lots of Facebook scams because, of course, once an audience becomes very large, the criminals aren't stupid. They go where people are. And invitation to participate in groups can or cannot be a scam. You've heard this advice forever. Don't click in links that are sent to you in email, right? Because it might be from a person trying to steal your bank password, trying to send you to a trick site. Well, unfortunately, Facebook has chosen a method where they send out links in email all the time. So they made it very, very easy for phishers to imitate their emails and get people to go to websites that are booby-trapped with viruses or whatnot. The other thing I really want to warn your listeners about, if I have a moment, is Facebook identity theft is becoming a really, really big problem where someone hijacks your account. Because most people don't think of their Facebook page to be as important as, say, their online banking page. So they might not use a very tough password or might casually give it out or just make it obvious. That can be disastrous. I've written stories about people who've had their Facebook account hijacked. And try to picture this. Suddenly someone sends a note to every one of your friends. It looks like it's from you. It probably has your picture next to it. And it'll say something like, I've just gotten mugged. I'm in London overseas. I don't have any money. Can you help me get home? I need a little cash to deal with the embassy, and I'm going to be in jail because I've been arrested. And it looks very realistic. I've spoken to people who've sent money overseas, wired it to London, thinking they were helping a friend, only to find out they were sending it to a scam artist. Or even not including money. Just imagine what someone could do if they were able to hijack your identity on Facebook and send a note to all your friends. So treat those Facebook passwords with great care and know that even if you have a very, very small circle of participation on Facebook, someone could create a big hassle for you pretty quickly.
We're going to have to take a short break. My guest is Bob Sullivan, author of Stop Getting Ripped Off, Why Consumers Get Screwed, and How You Can Always Get a Fair Deal. Bob's going to be in town tomorrow as a keynote for the first Ohio Consumer Protection Summit, sponsored by the Office of the Ohio Attorney General, Richard Cordray. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to join the conversation, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. NPR News.
Although actress Chloe Sevigny is known for her fashion sense, she says she doesn't mind being stuck in a prairie dress for her Golden Globe-winning performance as a wife in a polygamous family on HBO's Big Love.
When I was a child, I wouldn't let my mom put me in anything but calico dresses. And now, what do you know? Every day I'm in a calico dress, practically.
Chloe Sevigny on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Be associated with a trusted local and national source for accurate news coverage. For more information, contact Christine at 247-4469. And thank you for supporting WOSU 820 NPR News. And you can get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email to sign up for one of our e-newsletters. 28 degrees in downtown Columbus, clouds today and a high of 35. Cloudy skies tonight and a low of 22. Cloudy for Wednesday and a high of 33. And then some sunshine on Thursday and a high of 36. This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and it's 11:40. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is New York Times bestselling author Bob Sullivan. He's also a blogger for MSNBC.com. You can go to his blog. It's called Red Tape Chronicles. Covers everything from credit card to student loan debt. And I have two questions about, one about credit card issues and another one about student loan, Bob. So first, in recent months, I've had two personal finance advisors. One is a newspaper columnist and the other is an advisor. Have two different ideas about the value of the credit card reward programs. One of them said, ignore them. They're only intended to make you actually spend more money on your credit card than you already would have without the reward program. And the other one said, hey, as long as you pay your credit card off every month, take advantage of it. Bob, what do you think?
So I'm the tiebreaker here.
Yes.
here's the answer. They're both right. I'll give you the answer I give people. If they give me 15 seconds to supply them with an answer, mm-hmm. I'll say avoid them because basically the credit card companies, banks, are big companies with big buildings and big computers, and they've got this figured out in a way that you're going to ultimately lose. Rewards cards have extra tricks. They always have higher interest rates. They always have more punishing penalty fees. And it's easy to have something happen where you lose all those points. So you might work for a couple of years to try to save stuff up and go on that dream trip to Ireland, and it can all be lost because you accidentally are late by 5 days, 1 month. So if you want my shortest advice, the advice is avoid them because in the end you'll probably lose. However, there are really two kinds of consumers, some of these economist researchers say. There's groups called the sophisticates, and then there's everybody else. And, you know, if you're great at clipping coupons and you know that you haven't missed a credit card payment in 20 years, actually, yeah, you can do well by these benefits cards. But even those folks should know that benefits are being cut way back. In some cases, it takes 60,000 miles, which is the equivalent of spending $60,000, to get a single free airline ticket across the country. So you're better off doing the simplest thing, which is getting one of those cash back cards. You get 1% cash back, you've got $600 on that $60,000 worth of purchases, which is worth much more than a round-trip plane ticket in the domestic U.S. So, understand if you're going to play that game, that you're playing a game where the rules are very tilted against you. And if you still want to do it, we'll be my guest. But know that, you know, the odds are you're going to lose.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Pat, you're on the air with Bob Sullivan. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Pat.
I have two comments. One is that I read a book not long ago, or skimmed a book, I'll admit, called Your Call Is Not That Important to Us.
Yes, I know it well.
The customer service industry. I right. found it very entertaining and enlightening. The other comment is that one of my sisters works for a large bank in the collections department. And while she's never, she never uses names, but she will occasionally comment, especially when she first started on the job, about how many people were clueless about how much money they had in their checking account, and it was a complete surprise to them when the bank would call. The way it works in her department, the bank will call after a few days of mounting fees to see, well, gee, do you really know what's going on with your, do you really know what's going on with your checking account? And she was amazed at how many people were just they had no idea that that they were overdrawn, and sometimes they would call looking for a young person, maybe somebody over 18, and the parents would be really upset because she could not share any of the account information with them because their name was on the account. I always know how much money I have available in my account because I've been burned a couple of times with bounced checks, and I don't want mm-hmm. that happening to me. I'm amazed when she tells these little stories about that,
What's that about, Bob?
Well, it's true. A lot of folks are detached from their financial picture. That's one of the prime pieces of advice that I give in the book. There should never be a day where you don't have a pretty good idea what's in your checking account. But here's a couple of really important points about this. Checking accounts just are not what they used to be. It used to be that you got one or two paychecks a month, you wrote two or three checks a month. It was very easy to balance your checkbook. But nowadays, there's five different ways to move money out of your checking account, five different big ways. ATMs, debit card purchases, signature debit purchases, electronic transfers. So instead of having four or five transactions a month, most people have 40 or 50 transactions a month. And the velocity of all those transactions, which are often pending for several days, make it genuinely very, very difficult for most people to know precisely what's in their account. I think this is a bad idea. And in the book, I have this explained in great detail. But I think people should have two checking accounts, so that they don't have every single ATM withdrawal or purchase mucking up what is their basic amount of money they have. Because that's a very important number to have at your grasp. And one other real important point I want to make, I know there are people who are irresponsible with their checking accounts, and I hear this all the time as justification for charging cascading $35 overdraft fees four or five times during the course of a weekend. Two wrongs don't make a right, my mom always taught me. And just because people make mistakes doesn't mean that they should be subject to $200 or $300 worth of fees for services that weren't anywhere near that amount of money.
Yeah. How safe are bank account, online bank account information? If I want to look at my computer at home, how safe are those?
I use online banking. I think that online banking is a really important key nowadays to keeping a good grasp of what's in your account and making sure you're not getting into any kind of danger there. If you are a person, are you asking whether or not your information is safe, or are you asking whether it's accurate?
Well, I guess maybe I'm a little more trusting than I should be, because I had really, when I was younger and the bank statements came, I learned pretty quickly how to balance it. But now you're right with the overdraft and the automatic withdrawals. I have a generally good idea of where I am. I think I look at my account every day, but I couldn't vouch for the accuracy of the bank records.
You might look at your, and it's a great idea. I do. I think I suggest looking at it, every day, every couple of days, to make sure you have a good idea where you are, but it could be far off. You could have a check that's taking longer to clear, or gas stations put these crazy holds on people's debit cards, and so $100 seems to come and go. So it's not gospel what you see online, and frankly, the only way to deal with that, and this isn't great advice for people, but I don't know what better advice there is to leave a pretty large buffer in your checking account, so that you don't get hit with a fee. Because, one bout with overdraft fees a year is enough to just kill a good portion of your savings. It sounds like you've already been through this. And so it's probably worth leaving $500 extra in your account, as that buffer, to make sure that you never run into the situation.
See, Bob, when you were talking about having two different accounts, did you mean one for the big, like your mortgage, your utilities, your car payment, that kind of thing, and then the other one just for your everyday, debit-aholic.
I call them holding accounts and allowance accounts.
Okay.
So my suggestion is you put $500 or whatever your monthly spending money is into a separate account, maybe even at a separate bank, so that you really keep them separate, attached to a separate debit card. And if you have to swipe your card a bunch of places, use that so that your main account is just for your paychecks and just for your big checks. So, again, you always know where your wealth really is. Critical element to that is that in that allowance account, that you don't have overdraft protection on it, so that if it goes to zero, it's just zero, and you don't end up spending more than what is in there.
Okay. If you're just joining us, my guest is Bob Sullivan, author of Stop Getting Ripped Off, Why Consumers Get Screwed, and How You Can Always Get a Fair Deal. Bob is also a blogger for MSNBC.com. His Red Tape Chronicles cover all sorts of issues, all the stuff we've been talking about today, and much, much more. If you would like to speak with Bob, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have about 8.5 minutes. We have an email from Barbara. She writes, I was also tired of my phone company, another phone company story, Bob, and its so-called special deal for long distance. The problem was that I would frequently receive notices from them with small print reviewing all the upcoming changes in their plans. Who has time to read these notices and figure out the most cost-effective plan for one's long-distance habits? My solution was to opt out of any long-distance plan. I buy long-distance cards on sale and pay 2 to 3 cents per minute. What do you think about that idea, Bob?
I think that's spectacular. A lot of good things happen when you stop using your landline for long-distance calls. Plenty of folks have unlimited long-distance on their cell phones now, which can also be a good option. But calling cards can be very inexpensive as well. You also get out of paying a set of government taxes on your home phone when you don't have long-distance service. You don't pay into the schools and libraries tax, for example. So it can save you even more than you realize. Just have basic phone service that just allows you to make emergency calls, local calls, and 800 calls. And the other thing I really like, I like all of these pay-as-you-go systems, because when you buy calling cards, you know exactly what you're spending. One of the big tricks to long-distance per-minute charges and any kind of automated payments is that when people don't know what they're spending, think about those EasyPass toll collectors, for example, or just using a credit card to buy things instead of money. When you don't feel the money leaving your hands, you always spend more. There's all sorts of studies that show that. So if you have to go out and buy calling cards, that helps you do a great job of budgeting for your long distance, and I applaud that.
614-292-8513. And Brenda, you're on the air. Your father has Alzheimer's, you said, and he's being exploited because of that.
Yes. We put him into assisted living recently, and I have been paying all of his bills for probably a year and a half now. And I recently noticed that there are gas companies that are just jumping in and changing his providers. And I called the latest company, and they said, well, we're allowed to do that. But if you want to talk to anybody about it, call the utility company that he's with. So I did that, and they told me that they could put a hold on that type of thing happening to him again. And we've also had people knocking on our door, showing what appears to be an invoice from our gas provider, and it's not. They're being very deceitful about it.
Hmm. Bob, what can people do to protect their parents like that?
Oh, God. First of all, I honor your caring for your parents. I mean, that's such a hard situation. There's so much. The worst thing in the world is to have to deal with this kind of nonsense when you're trying to just love someone as they're getting older. It's a nightmare. Where does the power of attorney rest for you, your dad?
I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
But you have the power of attorney?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, then he's not able to enter into any binding contracts at this point. So. Have you found that the hold, as you described it, is working?
Well, when I called and told them I wanted the original company, they said that I'm talking about the utility company now. They said that it was fine. And what the other thing that this second company told me was that he had to authorize somebody either by phone or somebody knocking on his door, or there was a third thing which I've forgotten.
Hmm.
This happens. It's not unlike the phone cramming that we described earlier. It doesn't take very much at all for these utility companies to switch. This is, again, a byproduct of the deregulating some of these industries. The principle of making it very easy for people to switch is supposed to encourage competition. It also encourages deceit like this. So,
or in my case, just plain ordinary confusion. I'm not.
Yeah.
Who needs more decisions?
The term is confusion marketing, and that's really the term of art here for a lot of these companies. It sounds to me like you're doing just about all you can do. I would like to hear more about the fake bill that's being presented. Maybe we don't have time here, but you could email me if you want to hang on for a second. We can get you my email address. I don't mind your listeners having. It's easy to get me at Bob Sullivan at feedback.msnbc.com, because that fake bill, if it's a fake bill that you're describing, that takes it to another level. And if that's something that's going on, I sure would like to tell people about it.
Okay. If you, Brenda, if you're out there, it's just Bob Sullivan at feedback@msnbc.com. And you can get more, he can learn more about your situation. We have just a few more minutes and a lot of calls. Give us a call if you have time, 614-292-8513. And David, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
A couple of points. I do like the rewards program. My wife and I pay off our credit cards, and we don't charge extra to get these. And I just noticed that my card had this rewards program, and I was able to cash in almost $200 in a month because I had obviously let the balance go for a long time. So I like the rewards program, but I think you're right. If you're the kind of person who will not pay off his credit card or who could be enticed by spending more because of this, it's a bad deal. Second thing I want to make is that I agree with you. You have to be vigilant. You have to check your accounts online. I check my checking account and our credit card accounts every day to see what's going on. And beyond that, on a computer, please make sure all your browsers are up to date, all your updates from your operating system is up to date, and have a good firewall.
Okay, David, thank you.
Uh-huh.
You can email us at allsides@wosu.org and talk to Bob as well. This is one. This email is from Sarah. She writes, I heard a story on Marketplace last night, a good public radio listener, about using your debit card as a credit card and signing. Signing benefits the credit companies because the store has to pay them more per transaction. Debit transactions are a flat fee, but my bank gives you double points for signing and not entering your debit PIN. Trickery! Exclamation point. Bob?
So when you go to the store and buy a pack of gum and pull out a piece of plastic and someone says to you, credit or debit, you are entering ground zero of the war that's going on among big financial companies. And consumers are a tiny pawn in this enormous game. Billions of dollars are at stake. When you pull out what is actually properly called a debit card, which is a card that's attached to your checking account as opposed to a credit card. Mm-hmm. And when someone says to you credit or debit, they're actually lying right off the bat. Both of them are debit transactions. One is properly called signature debit. The other is called PIN debit. And she's right. PIN debit is cheaper for the store. Signature debit is more expensive for the store. Generally speaking, banks give you some benefits for doing signature debit because they make money off of it. I'm going to tell people to avoid all of this because let me just reel the conversation way back and tell you that I don't believe in spending with debit cards at all. I know people do it, and I know people have their reasons for doing it. But responsible use of a credit card is really far better for a whole bunch of reasons. You eliminate the risk of overdrafts because you're not dealing with overdrafts. You have more consumer protections with credit cards than you do with debit cards. The rules were you are not responsible for the money that's spent are much more beneficial to consumers on credit cards than any kind of debit transaction. There's a lot of details to that, but you can trust me on this. Consumer Reports did a big piece on this about a year ago as well. And ultimately, if there's fraud, and there's a lot of fraud still, you're in a much better position if there's fraud on your credit card. All you have to do is call up and say, I'm not paying for this. Then if there's fraud in your debit card, which means the money's immediately gone from your checking account, and it's up to you to go get it back. Now, in most cases, virtually all cases, you will get it back. But you still have to get it back. And if you're traveling, it can be a big hassle. Obviously, your account can be emptied this way. So I think you should avoid the problem altogether and responsibly use a credit card, pay it off every month, and that's the safest thing to do.
Bob, we're out of time. Bob Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
For more information on where Bob's going to be, go to ohioattorneygeneral.gov/consumersummit. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.